going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome in to a Saturday morning WWL Draft First Take Edition. I am Jeff Nowak. That is Charlie Long Coleman behind the glass. This is fake energy, by the way, because I am exhausted. How are you feeling, Charlie? It's been this Friday to Saturday turnaround where you're drafting late into the night and then waking up to show the show at 9 a.m. It's always rough.
This is the one day where it's actually a day draft. All other nights and everything, and you get ready, and then you head into rounds 4 through 7, and it starts at 11 a.m.
Yeah.
So let's get into it, man. There's, I said the same thing yesterday, but there's still some really good players left on this board.
Well, first, let's go through the picks that came in yesterday.
Yes,
if you were doing literally anything else, you had better things to do with your day. The Saints made 3 draft picks. So day 1, number 9 overall, they took Kelvin Banks, offensive tackle out of Texas. Some people thought they might trade up, maybe go after a quarterback, maybe trade in back into the first round. Didn't do that. They stood pat at number 9, built their offensive line. You know, we talked a lot about that yesterday, so let's kind of move on. Second pick, we talked a ton about this in the pre-draft show. I did feel a little vindicated because I've spent the last several weeks talking about, I think the Saints are really high on Tyler Shuck. I think he's probably the second quarterback on their board. He was the second quarterback on my board. I felt like past Cam Ward, he was the guy that teams were going to fall in love with from a traits perspective, from a personality perspective. The age is not a concern, and the Saints clearly felt that way too. They went with him at number 40 overall. And Charlie, what was your reaction when that pick came down?
My initial reaction was there were some really good players on the board. Obviously, you're in the second round, so that's always going to be the case. And if you felt, I guess they didn't feel comfortable with Will Johnson's medicals.
Yeah.
Because that would have been my pick. And he only went a couple picks later to Arizona, and now he's got the chip on his shoulder and everything like that. But that felt like a kind of ideal replacement for Marshawn Lattimore and Paulson and Debo, who you both lost. Now, you know, the issue, like, people will talk about the age. The age is definitely a thing. He's 25 years old. On draft night, he's going to be 26 in September, Jeff. And so, like you said, if this is going to be a guy that's going to start for you for a few years, it's not really that big of a deal. I think that's part of the reason maybe they selected him is because he's ready to kind of come in and play.
Yeah.
That's going to be kind of the battle to watch because with all the uncertainty about Derek Carr, it's going to be Tyler Shuck and Spencer Rattler in camp. And Kellen Moore went out and got his guy. It kind of shows you which one kind of has an edge early on, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, people talk about the age. They talk about it as a negative. I asked Kellen Moore straight up, like, do you actually view that as a positive? Do you see at the quarterback position an older player as a beneficial thing? And he, you know, he kind of he did his Kellen Moore thing, kind of talking around it. But at the end of the day, yes, I think they do see that. Like, they don't look at 26 next year and say, well, he doesn't have a chance. They look at 26 next year and say, he should be ready. And, you know, like, we talk about the age, and no one ever talked about Spencer Rattler coming in last year as a 24-year-old and playing games. He was a long time in college, too. Like, when he started at Oklahoma, you know, I mean, that was a lifetime ago. And then he came to the NFL last year. So he's a year younger than Tyler Shuck. Fascinatingly, both from the same part of Arizona, both born on September 28th. Spencer Rattler was born September 28th, 2000. Tyler Shuck was born September 28th, 1999. What are the odds of that? It's kind of like they have a joint birthday party.
I did enjoy a tweet that I saw from someone that was basically like, this is the last player born in the 1900s that's going to be drafted.
The 1900s.
I know. Well, you just got to think about that. I mean, it is pretty funny. So, yeah, Tyler Shuck, and we'll see what happens. You know, Kellen had a lot of good things to say. And I also want to play Shuck's audio here, because you just listen to the dude talk. You can kind of tell why the quarterbacks in that room fell in love with him
in
the pre-draft process.
You can understand why his interviews went well. You can understand why teams sat down with him at the combine and
very charismatic dude
at the Senior Bowl and were like, I think this guy can lead a team. And, you know, the injuries, Kellen Moore described them as non-orthopedic, and that's kind of what we talked about yesterday. If we were talking about knee replacements, you know, multiple knee surgeries, that's one thing. You're talking about a broken clavicle, or no, I'm sorry, broken collarbone.
Yep.
Twice. He had one broken collarbone, and then he...
And a fibula, I think.
Yeah, and then the fibula. But, like, these are breaks. These set them. I asked Tyler straight up, like, how long did it take you to get back before you felt comfortable behind the offensive line? Because that's been a criticism where he looks a little gun-shy in there at times. And he said, really, in, you know, 6 to 8 weeks in your back. Like, a broken bone is not something that lingers. You don't have to do any crazy rehab to strengthen that area more than, you know, the typical type of injury. It's more so like, yeah, it's a setback. It'll end your season, but you're not coming back with people wondering, like, oh, will his knee ever be the same? It's like, oh, the bone is there. It still works. So I don't think the Saints were scared off by the injuries either. So I think a lot of the red flags that people constantly throw out there, I don't think the Saints saw those as red flags.
So 7 years in college, and when we were speaking with him last night, he mentioned, you know, other guys that had really long journeys in college, like the Baker Mayfields and the Bo Nix.
Yep.
And then he also mentioned Jaden Daniels and how those guys were able to kind of come into the NFL at a little bit more of a mature level.
And they succeed right away.
And they succeed right off the bat. And so he said that that's kind of the outline that he wants to try and follow. But it's already been laid by some other guys in the past.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, right? If you're drafting a 25-year-old quarterback, you better feel like he can come in and contribute right away, because you don't have time to say, oh, we're going to develop him, we're going to sit him down 2 to 3 years before we figure out whether he's a starter, he's 28 years old. If he comes in and is an immediate contributor and you get into the end of his rookie contract and he's 30 years old, that's when you want to be spending money on a quarterback. It's not, you know, and if you get to the end of that second contract and you're talking about a 35-year-old, And you still want him, and the issue is he's too old. Like, I don't know. You're talking about the 40th overall pick. I've been comparing him to Jared Goff over the last several weeks. And
yeah,
the funny thing is I see reactions from people like, wow, why? That's a terrible comparison. Why would you draft together? It reminds you of Jared Goff. And I'm like, did people not watch Jared Goff? Are we talking about a different four-time Pro Bowler who threw for 4,700 yards last year, was fifth in the MVP voting, has been to a Super Bowl, has lived in the playoffs his entire career? Is that really a bad comp for people? Are people seeing Jared Goff and saying, ah, I can't, getting Jared Goff at number 40, what a nightmare. I think that would be a great get at number 40.
I think it's really this simple. It's not a good quarterback class. It's not at all.
No, it's not.
And so Kellen saw a guy in the pre-draft process that he really, really loved and that he thought he could mold. And so, yes, you use a second-round pick on him. Who knows how far he could have fallen if you didn't use a second-round pick? We have no idea. Because the next quarterback that was off the board...
I think he would have gone very far.
The next quarterback off the board, though, was, I believe, Milroe in, like, the early...
When it was the Seahawks in the third round.
Yeah. It was, I want to say, in the 90s.
I think it was 80. I think it was like 86, something like that.
Yeah,
it was Milroe to the
Seattle,
Seahawks.
Right. And then Dylan Gabriel went later.
But yeah, which we can... We're going to have to talk about
Shadur Sanders
at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah.
No, so, like, who knows if he would have potentially been there at pick 71. We don't. So Kellen fell in love with him in the pre-draft process. He wanted his guy. He went out and got his guy. And for what it's worth, you know, to your point that he probably wouldn't have fallen super far past 40, is that there were other teams that really liked him as well.
Yeah.
Like, the Saints were not the only team that thought he was, you know, QB2 in this class. So
Yeah, no, I mean, Milroe went 92 to the Seahawks, so you're right. Right before 92, the Saints picked, actually. That's why I kind of lost track of it. But, no, I mean, I think that's like, if people say, it's a reach, you got him later. I don't think so. I think I've said this throughout this process, like, the mock draft universe was a lot lower on Tyler Shuck than teams were. And Correct. He comes out of a pro-style system. We talked to Jeff Brohm. You know, one of the reasons Tyler was able to stay healthy last year as opposed to the earlier seasons in his career, and the year at Oregon that was limited to 7 games, that was due to COVID. That wasn't an injury. But, you know, is because they ran a pro-style offense. You know, this is a very athletic guy. He was asked to run a lot at Texas Tech, at Oregon. He wasn't asked to do that at Louisville. He took fewer hits. He was healthy. And you kind of saw the arm talent flourish. Let's, before we, you know, we talk the entire show about the quarterback position, let us know what you think. 504-260-187. Hit us up on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Did you like the pick? Did you hate the pick? I know, you know, it's just,
there's a visceral reaction.
It was not
to the pick.
A sexy name. People wanted Shedeur Sanders. They wanted literally anybody else. I get it. This was a pick that made sense to me. It was really just a question of, are you in love with a quarterback at number 40? Or are you in love with the board? Because the board was excellent at that point. Just the names that were there, Trey Amos, Will Johnson.
Donovan Ezeraku,
if they didn't go Shuck, I said Ezeraku. Mike Green was still on the board, right?
Yep. Like, and of course he goes to Baltimore.
He fell to Baltimore. And
Baltimore, like, we'll talk about our favorite drafts probably tomorrow once we have the full classes realized, but Baltimore's killing it. And so the Raiders are also quietly having a really good draft. But,
yeah,
like, once again, we'll get to all that tomorrow when we do the draft recap show.
I see Mike Green as a guy that in 2 to 3 years would be like, wait, he was a what pick? He went 59 overall.
Like,
what, how?
Sack player.
And we're going to say, okay, there were red flags in the draft process. And, you know, I think this is kind of how I put it yesterday. Teams, whether you believe in these allegations or not, like how you land on them, teams will have wanted to vet them themselves. And some teams will have done that better than others. So if you haven't done that, whether it's not necessarily about like, what are the allegations? Are we comfortable with that or not? It's, did we do the vetting? And some team, like the Ravens, went deep on the vetting and they felt good about it, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if the red flags were that significant, he wouldn't have been a second round pick. He would have continued to fall. It's, are you comfortable with the player? Did you turn over all the rocks, talk to the people you need to talk to feel good about it? Because, like, that's the thing with Shedeur Sanders. It's the thing with Mike Green. It's like, teams are marrying these players effectively. Like, you need to know who they are. Thomas Dimitroff, the way he would always phrase it, you need to sniff the pits, which is graphic, but, like, that's really what it's about. Like, you do not just bring in a player, especially in this first or second day of the draft, unless you feel good about it, unless they're on your board and you don't have a red tag on them that says character risk. Like, this is a problem. So, no, I mean, I feel good about that. The Saints went with a guy that I'm sure they feel really good about in Vernon Broughton, because, you know, it's a defensive tackle out of Texas. So we already know they've been scouting Texas. They've spent a good bit of time on that Texas roster. And yes, Bo Davis was at Texas from 2021 to 2023,
yep,
coaching the defensive line. And, you know, when the Saints sent out the videos with the call to the player, right? Bo Davis is the one who called Vernon Broughton to tell him he was the pick.
Yeah, and Vernon came on with us, and he was just like, I can't wait to get back with Coach Bo and everything.
He said he loves him.
Yeah.
Like, he said they treated him like family. What Bo described it, he was joking when they call him chicken legs, which is funny.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a massive human being. But he kind of joked with him. He said, you're my Easter basket. And it's a funny thing, and I think, like, you don't really hear Bo Davis talk a lot. Like,
No.
I think that's more of the personality that, like, wins over the players, that the people on the outside who kind of see this gruff looking dude, you know, don't necessarily get. But, like, that's to me, it's like, he's excited. Like, he pounded the table for that guy.
We've talked with Pete Jenkins multiple times about Bo Davis, who's a Pete protege, and Pete just says nothing but good things. Like, we talked about him when he came back to LSU in the first place, and then we also talked to him once he joined the Saints this past all season. So, Bo Davis, you get really excited for the potential of this defensive line, because there are some talented pieces up front, and now you have Bo Davis coaching them. So it's super cool. With Vernon Broughton specifically, Mike D brought up a great comp last night. His player comp for him was actually someone that's on the Saints roster now. It's Devin Godshaw.
Okay.
As, like, a potential future nose tackle, a 6'5", 315-pound dude that can just eat space, stuff the run, also can provide a little bit in pass rush as well. So that was a pick that I didn't know where exactly Vernon Broughton was going to go, because with it was like him and Alfred Collins. And Alfred Collins was widely viewed in the pre-draft process as someone that was a little bit more highly coveted. And he went higher than Vernon did. But then Vernon goes pretty shortly afterwards. You know, I think he went around the same range as someone like Landon Jackson.
Who he went right before Landon Jackson.
We're really, really high on in the pre-draft process. So
he went 71, Landon went 72.
They obviously coveted interior defensive line, which obviously with how the Saints' rush defense has been in the past couple of years, you can understand why. Any kind of help on the interior would be coveted, and that's what they saw in Vernon Broughton.
Yeah, I think he was a little bit of a reach based on need. Like, I think at 71, it might have been a little too rich. You may have been able to sit at 93 and get him, but they clearly felt like he's going to be a good fit. I don't know if he profiles as a nose so much as I think he'll probably slot in as a defensive end right now in the 3-4.
Yeah, but, right off the bat,
you know, he's got the size to play nose, and if, you know, Mike's comparing him to Von Godshaw, he's probably going to be your starting nose. So I'm intrigued to see how Brandon Staley uses him. But maybe my favorite pick of yesterday is a guy that I didn't even really, wasn't even on my radar.
Same here.
Until the Saints picked him, and then I started looking into him, and I'm like, wow. You know? And that's Jonas Sanker. It's Jonas, like Valanciunas, so we already have practice. You know, I was going to have a hard time getting over Jonas, but we've spent so much time talking about Jonas Valanciunas, it just felt natural to me. So we've got Jonas Sanker, the guy who came up playing eight-man football. You don't hear that very much. Yep. Scott Shanley also came up playing eight-man football. If you know anything about Scott Shanley, he's passed. He replied to it and said, it's arena football without the arena. Everyone's an eligible receiver, and it's really fast-paced. It's fun. You know, and there's still hits. It's not like you're running around playing flag football. Like, you're still hitting. And, you know, when we talked to Jonas on the Zoom call after he got picked, you know, he played quarterback. And he played safety. I feel like 90% of the players who get drafted are like, I played quarterback in high school.
Right.
You were probably the best athlete on your high school team. But, you know, he kind of talked about, like, he wasn't high on anyone's radar in the recruiting process, right? When you play eight-man football, that's not where the scouts go. But, you know, there was a couple highlights, and I tweeted him out yesterday. One is as a quarterback, he's hurdling people. He's spinning into the end zone. Another one, he's coming up as a safety and, like, laying the wood on a 200-pound running back and knocking him back 6 feet. And he said, like, yeah, I mean, we asked him, like, what are some of his biggest hits? And he, like, immediately was like, well, I had a couple in high school. They were like, man. And he said that kind of jump-started him on the scouts' radar, and he kind of went from there. 205 tackles over the last two seasons from the safety position.
Yep.
That's a lot of tackling. He's going to be more of an in-the-box guy. You know, we're going to talk a lot about the star position, right? Like, because we are going to have to transition terminology-wise from calling everything a nickel, because there's really no nickel in Brandon Staley's defense. It's the star role that is a little different. I asked Kellen if he profiles to that. He said yes, he just does a little bit of everything, and that's what that job is, to do a little bit of everything. Brandon Staley also said they want to go too deep, and I think that's what that is.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the guys were bringing this up last night, that we don't really know exactly how Brandon wants to use those safeties until we actually see it. And they obviously have a plan for the guy if they picked him in the third round. Like we talked about, you have to be in love with these players if you pick them on day one and day two. Day three is more of, you know, at this point, best player on your board, or if there's a coach that will be pounding the table for a guy, or a scout, or someone in the room that just says, we need to make sure that we get this guy. And it's more of dart throws. But day one and day two are extraordinarily important. And obviously, someone in the secondary room, or maybe even it was Staley himself, really liked his fit.
Yeah, and I, on day three, I'm not Mike Dettillier. I kind of learn about these players a lot of the times after they're picked.
I'm telling you, there's some good ones. But especially in round four, and the Saints have 2 fourth-round picks, which is exciting. They had 2 third-round picks as well as part of the Marshawn Lattimore trade. 2 fourth-round picks, I would like to keep both of them, and we'll see what they end up doing. But there are some good players. The Saints have about 10 picks before they're up.
No question. All right, so this is the draft first take. I'm Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long. After this, we're going to hand it off to the guys over at the Rouse's Market on Power Boulevard. Make sure to stay tuned for that. Saints have 5 picks today. We're going to get into a ton of it. Again, let us know what you think. 504-260-1870. We'll take you up till 11 a.m. Busy day of draft coverage. Keep it locked on WWL. Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long coming back in on WWL. And we're just getting started. It's going to be a long day of draft coverage. We're taking you up till 11 a.m. in the start of the draft, and we're throwing over to the trainsouth.com. WWL Draft Fest is going to continue live from Rouse's Market over on Power Boulevard. Here, every pick as it happens, all pro analysis and exclusive interviews with every new Saints player. That's 5 picks today, so it's going to be a busy, busy show. I'm kind of rooting for a trade because, you know, I don't know. I don't like hanging around to the 253rd pick or whatever just to make I'd rather consolidate.
A priority undrafted free agent.
That's where I am. I'd rather consolidate. But, hey, you know, we'll see. And then, yes, we'll have all the UDFAs, but we'll have Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, draft analyst Mike Dettillier, voice of the Saints, Mike Haas, and WWL Sports Director Steve Geller. Make sure to check it out, 3711 Power Boulevard in Metairie. Come out and celebrate football with Saints Radio, WWL, AMFM.com, and the Odyssey app. Charlie, you know, how are you feeling today? We're going to get into some Tyler Shuck audio here. Before we do, just kind of give me your kind of like one-sentence feeling about, maybe two sentences, about where we are right now.
As far as days one and two, or kind of looking ahead to day three?
Day one and two.
You feel, one to two sentences is all I can afford you.
You can stretch it out. This is radio.
Listen, you got a cornerstone piece of your offensive line in Kelvin Banks in round one, and you feel great about that. Day two was a lot of picks that, you know, maybe were a little bit off the consensus, but it's obviously players that have intriguing fits with the new coaching staff and guys that the new coaching staff were probably banging the table for. Specifically, obviously, we know the situation with Kellen Moore and Tyler Shuck, that he fell in love with them in the pre-draft process. Shuck fell in love with the coaching staff here, and we're about to play the interview here in just a second where he talked about, and I know this is a lot longer than two sentences, Jeff, but you know, we're getting to the audio here in just a second, where he fell in love with talking with Scott Tolzien, talking with Doug Nussmeier, talking with Coach Moore about playing quarterback, and that this was his preferred landing spot. So we'll see if that marriage works out. Vernon Broughton, you know, you feel good about getting a big run-stuffing defensive tackle because it's been a hole on this roster, to be completely honest with you. They haven't been able to win up front in the interior of the defensive line in the run game, and that's why, you know, you've had one of the worst run defenses in pro football. So you get a potential cornerstone there, and then also the safety, and we'll see exactly how they decide to use Jonas Sanker as well. So,
yeah, and you know, one thing that Kellen's talked about a lot, it's a big boy game.
Yeah,
you know, as 2090 over here, 2090. It's early. I'm still drinking coffee. Pointed out in the Oakland Jewelers talking text line. You know, first three picks of the draft, all 6'5 guys. So they're putting their money where their mouth is.
No, that's a good point.
They're not drafting undersized players.
That and that they also address two Texas trench players as well.
Yes.
Kelvin Banks and Vernon Broughton. So
I don't know how Eric McCoy is going to feel about that. But
yeah, going to the Longhorn well.
Yeah. It can't be. You know, it used to be Texas A&M. We had Dennis Allen. We had all these Texas A&M guys. Now we have all these Longhorns. I don't know. Eric might be feeling a little. You know, he's a Giggum guy. Yeah, he might be the horns down might not go over that well when they're half the roster is Texas players. But let's go to the non-Texas player. We're gonna go to the 6'5 guy who's actually a quarterback. He came on Draft Fest yesterday with the guys. Let's hit it.
Guys on the line now, happy to welcome in the newest member of the Black and Gold. Tyler Shuck, quarterback, joining the Black and Gold with their second round pick. Thanks so much for joining us here on WWL Saints Radio. I'm Steve Geller. With me, Tyler, I got Mike Haas, Mike Dettillier, Saints legends Deuce McAllister, and Bobby Hebert. Tyler, how are you doing, man? Congratulations.
Awesome. I'm fired up, guys. Just excited to get down there and, you know, so fired up for this opportunity and really excited to get to talk to you guys as well.
Now, Tyler, how excited you are that all of a sudden it's going to be a lot of quarterbacks in the room when you look at, you know, all the players and then you look at the coaches. So that's a lot of wisdom going around there. So you got to be fortunate to be with Coach Kellen Moore. And then you look at Nussmeier. It goes on and on. And it's just and they have that confidence in you. You have to be pleased with that, that they believe in you to draft you this high.
No doubt. You know, I think it's the only team where the quarterback coach, the OC, and the head coach are all quarterbacks that have played at, you know, the highest level. And, you know, they know what it looks like. And I'm just really excited to learn from them. And like you said, you got all those QBs in the room, and it's such a great, you know, such a great room to be a part of, and it's so vital to the success of the team. And I'm just really, really excited to come in there and continue to learn and grow and compete.
Tyler, I want to tell you congratulations, first of all, and, you know, just tell us about this process. I know that you met with the Saints, you know, a couple of times, and, you know, it's been a process for you as well when you talk about to get to this point. Just tell us about that process for you and some of the things that you're looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, I had an unbelievable process with the Saints and obviously other multiple teams as well. But I think what stood out to me was, you know, I spent the whole day with the quarterback coach Tolzien, and before my pro day, and had dinner and lunch and did the whole, you know, film and board work with him. Got to come to New Orleans and visit with all the coaches and just saw the unbelievable facilities and really fell in love with how they viewed the quarterback position, you know, how they talked about it. And just working with them, and that was kind of my number one spot in the back of my head. And, you know, I was going to be excited no matter what, but whenever it started, kind of the stars aligned that way, I was definitely getting, you know, my heart was beating a little bit. And once it finally happened, it was, just a blessing for sure. I mean, I can't wait.
Now, Tyler, you were fortunate, like at Louisville, you were able to stay healthy, but really only one full year of starting experience without having the season, you know, cut short, whether by injuries. Is that just something that you think maybe you're a little snake bit there? And that the one thing I was looking at, your accuracy sometimes can run cold and hot. Is that something that how clean is the pocket, or how do you break that down as far as, because you say you could throw the ball, you got a pretty ball, but what's your breakdown when you look at your situation now? And obviously It only takes one great season to really get recognized, and that's what happened at Louisville.
Yeah, you know, for me, I had a full season at Oregon, and it was obviously cut short by COVID, and had no injuries then. And, you know, whenever I did get injured, you know, I kind of had the freak bone breaks with the collarbone, and I got hip dropped with my fibula, and it hasn't affected me since then. It's kind of helped me out more than anything mentally, just game planning with the staff and finding a way to add value. But I think for me, to your point, with some of the accuracy things that you talked about, it really stems from the footwork that it was the first time in my career, you know, I'm playing in a pro-style system where you're taking 7-step, 5-step drops, you know, trying to be more consistent with that, being more grounded, and you're asked to do a lot more things. And it was great for me, you know, to go through that, to grow through that, and come out of the other side where you can, okay, I understand, you know, how I can improve this way rather than coming into the NFL. And now you're going through the learning process. And, you know, obviously I'm going to continue to learn and grow and get better. But for me, it kind of strengthened me from that perspective, and being able to talk about that and dive into it, I think really helped me throughout this process.
Tyler, Mike Dettelier, congratulations on getting selected by the Saints. First question is, who did you work with in the offseason? And I know everybody has somebody, a kind of quarterback guru or training guru they work with. And How much time did you spend with Kellen Moore in any sort of one-on-one discussion? Was it at the combine, individual workouts, that sort of thing?
Yeah, for me, this, you know, for the past 3 years, really, and especially throughout this process, worked with Landry Klon, with QB Country. He's a former Nickel State quarterback in Thibodeau. So I know he's fired up for me to go back to Louisiana, and met him at the Manning Passing Academy, and Archie and all those guys were obviously a huge influence on me, and just so excited for that opportunity. And then meeting with Kellen, you know, we met for, you know, probably over a couple hours whenever I was on the visit, being able to sit down and have lunch and watch a bunch of film with him, and did the same thing with Coach Nussmeier and Coach Tolzien, and I was just really thankful for that chance, and we connected and hit it off right away.
Tyler, Mike Haas, I'm the voice of the Saints. I have spent the last 10 minutes in this rabbit hole in Arizona. First off, congratulations. So you are from Chandler, went to Chandler Hamilton, and Spencer Rattler went to some Phoenix. He went to Pinnacle. And so you're both born on September 28th, a year apart. I know Pinnacle and Chandler played in 2014. What is your relationship, if anything?
Did y'all play against each other?
Did you play against each other? Do you know each other? Just tell me about that.
Yeah. No, we know each other. We know each other for sure. We played each other growing up in like peewee football back in the day, and he was like the Scottsdale Firebirds. I was on the Chandler Pumas or something like that. And then obviously we went to different high schools, so we weren't in the same district, so we didn't play in high school, but obviously knew each other. We were kind of in the QB circuit together. We got to chat and hang out at the Manning Passing Academy, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I was super fired up to work with him. And obviously you got, you know, a couple of Arizona guys there with Cam Jordan and Spencer, and previously working and you know, living and rooming with Juwan Johnson as well. So I can't wait.
All right, so quarterbacks are like golfers. who won in the Pee Wee? Scottsdale, the Firebirds, or the Pumas?
The Pumas.
I don't remember. I think we got the better of them. Back then you guys were calling me old. That was definitely a while ago, but I remember playing them at Chaparral or something like that. But if we were gonna golf, I'm sure I'd probably win that though.
Very cool. Thank you, man. I appreciate you going down the rabbit hole with me.
Now, Tyler, it's Bobby Hebert. Now, if you look at my name, how you get Hebert out of Hebert? H-E-B-E-R-T. Well, how do you get Shuck out of S-H-O-U-G-H? Is that an Irish name, or what is that? Because people say, well, I like that Tyler Show or Shaw or something like that.
Yeah,
and I go, no, it's Shuck. We like to shuck oysters down here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're shucking oysters. It definitely should not be that. It's Scottish for a medium-sized dog. Learned that, so that's pretty cool. But kindergarten definitely sucked trying to explain that to people. But yeah, it's Shuck, and once people kind of learned it, they just rolled with it. So T Shuck, Shuck. That's what I go by. And but yeah, it's to your point. It doesn't make sense.
And shucking oysters here in Louisiana. Yeah, that's a good thing.
There we go.
Tyler, I was telling them this when you came to Manning. They had your name up on that piece of paper, and then under it in parentheses, it was Shuck. Because, everybody would have might have messed that up a little bit. Yeah. But I do recall that as you sitting down waiting to get interviewed, they had that piece of paper above you, and they had your name spelled out, but underneath it in parentheses, it was Shuck.
Yeah, it's definitely. I was glad they got it right as well on the draft. But the Shuck, I debated that as a kid. I was like, man, why does it sound like this? I'm just gonna change it when I'm 18, and I just ended up keeping it the same just because it stuck. And and obviously, once you know it, you don't forget it. But no, I mean, it's definitely pretty funny for sure.
Now, Tyler Shuck, age 25. I think that could work to your advantage. That's what I said. He's not coming into pro football like wet behind the ears. I mean, you get like, oh, he's so talented. He's coming in a 20, 21-year-old. I think by being 25 and all the experience you have and where all the places you've been, that actually works to your benefit. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I think, quarterbacks, they probably play their best ball whenever they're in their 30s. You got Matthew Stafford playing MVP level. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers won multiple MVPs in their 30s and Super Bowls. And you got guys, Josh Allen and Lamar, getting older and playing, at MVP levels. And I think, the trend and, Baker Mayfield and Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels, guys who have kind of been through some stuff and have been seasoned and gone through some adversity and been through multiple situations, and they're kind of finding their stride. And, luckily I was able to do that in college, and that's why I was super excited for this opportunity. And I always felt like I was the most pro-ready guy in this draft class to come in and compete right away and contribute.
Tyler, definitely looking forward to you getting to get acquainted with the city. How much do you know about New Orleans? Have you gotten to visit some?
Well, he's been to Thibodeau.
He went to Thibodeau to the Manning camp.
Yeah. So he had to land in New Orleans first, probably, right?
Right. No, I've been multiple times, for sure. I haven't got to go out in the city much, but the food that we had in Thibodeau was the best I've ever had. No doubt about that. So I can't wait to get there. Definitely going to have to eat it in small quantities because I got to keep the weight right. But I definitely loved it whenever I was there. And you can't beat the weather either.
Yeah, it seems like you're well-grounded, happily married. You don't have to worry about hitting the town. New Orleans is compared sometimes to Las Vegas. So I think that actually can work to your benefit that you settle down and married, and football is your number one priority.
No doubt. No, we're excited to hopefully get a house somewhere and with a backyard and just go be all about ball, and just really excited to get in the building and definitely going to be living there in the building more than anything. So,
are you aware with the Who Dat tradition here of the Who Dat say they're going to beat them Saints? You got to give us your very first Who Dat here on WWL Saints Radio, Tyler.
Yes, sir. Who Dat? Who Dat? Who that said they're going to beat them Saints?
All right, pretty good.
You ready to rock and roll?
Appreciate the time, Tyler Shuck. Thank you so much for joining us here on WWL Saints Radio.
Yeah, that was good, Tyler.
That was really good.
Hey, somebody must have caught you up on that. You did really good.
Let's go. You know, Charlie, you've heard a lot of these Hoodats. I feel like this is the first year I've heard people get to the second verse.
Yes, it is.
Every year, you know, it's more like the Jonas Sanker. We'll have Jonas do it. Jonas. Oh, I did it. Jonas.
Oh, man. He
didn't know, you know, and it was just like.
Jonas was kind of confused.
Hoodat?
It's funny because he's a really, you can tell by listening to the guy that he's a bright kid.
He's very intelligent guy. He just didn't look up with the Hoodat.
He had no idea. So, like, he just had to, I guess, learn it, but he learned it on the spot and it went fine.
You'll get it.
No.
And Kelvin both got to the second verse. I think that's a good sign. I do. And you could tell, like, he knew what he was doing. He looked that up.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. But, I mean, also kind of doing it with some passion. Like, we've had some players come on the station. Yeah. They're just like, whatever with it. But when they give you a good, like, Hoodat, it's always really fun. It gets the crowd fired up for sure, too.
Who is it that dare have Who the temerity is that? To suggest they could defeat the Saints?
I
saw someone with a shirt that said that on that. Yeah, it has temerity in there. It doesn't quite hit as the champ. But all right, that was Tyler Shuck, Louisville
doesn't roll
quarterback.
Off the
we chatted with him. We'll be talking with him a lot more. He's the new quarterback of the New Orleans Saints. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Charlie Long. This is the TrainSouth.com Draft First Take. We're going to be rolling in. Got to talk about the quarterbacks. Got to talk about the Shedeur Sanders of it all. We'll get to it. Keep it locked here on WWL. And welcome back to Draft First Take. I'm Jeff Nowak. That's Charlie Long. Coleman running all the things that I don't understand behind the glass. Make sure to get out to Rouse's Market on Power Boulevard. We're taking you up to 11 a.m., then handing off to the guys, Deuce McAllister, Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller, Mike Dettelier, Mike Haas, to take you through the final four rounds of the draft and the final five Saints picks. But, you know, this segment, you know, we've kind of talked about it. We've referenced it. We haven't really got into it so far. Shedeur Sanders.
Yep.
A guy that, you know, Mel Kiper is having a come apart.
He's been crashing out for about 40,
because
maybe less than that hours.
I mean, he's having a rough time. I don't know what his liquor choice might have been, but he finished the bottle last night.
He ended last night by saying how disgusting it is.
He's not having a great time. But it's because he mocked Shedeur in the top 10.
He mocked him to the Saints.
And he is still on the board at the start of the fourth round.
Yeah, pick, what were we at, 103?
Doesn't matter, honestly. At this point, it's not about the pick. It's about teams have made a statement that they're not interested in drafting Shedeur.
Mel made a statement by saying that the Saints would have made the biggest mistake by not taking him in the second round when they got up to pick 40.
Apparently, every team in the NFL has made a massive mistake.
Yeah, you know, multiple times, by the way.
And they could be right. They could be right. They could be wrong. You know, I think the conversation you get into, and there's going to be a lot of talk about this, is, okay, is this a racism thing? Is it because he's black? And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily true, but, you know, at the same time, I do understand that. I think in the NFL, and we were talking about this off air, like, okay, I think he blew all of his interviews.
Yes.
And if you blow all of your interviews for a job, do you expect to get that job? The answer is no. Where the conversation comes in my opinion, is I think teams and team executives, the people who are the brain trusts, are more likely to view a black quarterback as arrogant in a scenario where if it was a white quarterback, you might consider him confident, right? He's confident. And I think that's where the disconnect comes in, of like, this is when you go into an interview and you're Shedeur Sanders and you go in like you would go into an NIL deal conversation or your college scouting and be like, this team's just going to be lucky to have me. That's not going to come off well with NFL teams. NFL teams are not going to say, yeah, we're just going to hand you this job. You have to convince us that we want to invest in you. We're going to give you millions and millions of dollars, and you're going to be the face of our franchise. You got to sell me on that. And I just don't think Shedeur was interested in selling himself in that scenario. And I think that just turned off coaches and teams. And once he got out of the first round, once he got out of the range where teams were drafting him to be a starting quarterback, who is inviting that circus that will come for your backup? For a guy competing to be your backup? No. And so that's why you saw him. Like the slide out of the first was interesting. The slide out of the second was eye-opening. And the slide out of the third makes a lot of sense when you're talking about drafting a quarterback that's going to be your backup. So, you know, we'll see where he goes. It kind of reminds, it's not that dissimilar to Spencer Rattler last year of like, you know, I think there's a talented guy there, but teams got turned off by one thing or another, and then it just kind of cascaded.
So there's a couple things here. first and foremost, how many teams are in on this quarterback class in the first place?
Right, right.
So you already have a limited pool. It's not 32 teams that are saying, oh, we're interested in drafting Shedeur Sanders. That's step one. Step two was that, to your point, Jeff, he completely blew the pre-draft process. He didn't want to participate at the combine. He didn't do any of the circuit events like the Senior Bowl or the Shrine Bowl or anything like that. And
he's not like Cam Newton here. Like, we're not talking about an elite, like, traits-driven quarterback.
He's like maybe a late day one, early day two type of prospect that just completely blew the pre-draft process because, you know, as I mentioned, not a participant at the combine, not a participant at any of the circuit events, but also unanimously, whenever you heard a team talk about his pre-draft interview, it was negative.
Yeah.
They did not like the guy at all. And so if you blow those job interviews like you were just talking about, teams aren't going to take a early round pick on you. They're not going to take the risk. And at this point, you enter the conversation where a day three pick, like, is he worth the headache as a backup quarterback at this point? And so who knows when the slide is going to stop? Because, you know, when we were talking about it yesterday during the pre-draft show, we were imagining that he would potentially be a second round pick, that there were a couple different spots that he could go. Some of the teams that needed quarterback, like the Saints, they took Tyler Shuck above him. The Seahawks were a weird one because they've kind of got, you know, Sam Darnold there now, but taking a developmental guy with Jalen Milroe.
Well, and a guy that can play.
In a developmental class.
A guy
you
can get on the field in some capacity.
Yes, in packages. Yes. But also, the one that was eye-opening was the Cleveland Browns passing him up multiple times and then taking Dylan Gabriel above him.
I mean, when you add up the number of times Cleveland said, we don't want Shedeur Sanders, it's wild.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But they were one of those teams that could have been in the market for drafting a rookie quarterback this year, and they said no. And so this is my kind of point with saying all this. There was already a limited number of teams that would have taken Shedeur in this class.
And he turned them all off.
And he turned all of them off.
Right.
And that is why he's sitting here on day three.
And here's the thing. This is a very insulated guy. I think this is a good thing for him. I think this should be an eye-opening thing for him.
Hopefully it's a humble pie slice.
Right.
You know,
because here's the thing. He came out of high school, or he went into high school. Who was his coach? Deion Sanders.
Yep.
He didn't have to go around. You know, he came to the NIL era of college where he's getting paid, and he never had to go around and like try to convince a team, oh, you want me to be your quarterback? He was like, I'm going to go be the starting quarterback at Colorado for my dad, one of the best football players of all time. Like, I have instant hype. Everyone's going to be talking about me from day one. Now you're going to the NFL. That's not the truth anymore. You got to humble yourself, and he just never did that. So hopefully that's what this is, and hopefully he can find success, and hopefully he can ingratiate himself into a locker room, because I like Shedeur Sanders. I think the person there is a good guy. He's fun to watch. He's enjoyable. He's a good kid. He just did not handle this process well, and that's what's happening right now. But all right, this is Draft First Take. I'm Jeff Nowak. Charlie Long coming back for one quick segment. Let's do it. WWL. Rolling on in to hour two. It's a Jazz Fest weekend, but we're talking about Draft Fest. We're talking about Draft Fest. I was trying to do an Allen Iverson thing. It didn't work there. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Charlie Long. Coleman behind the glass. We're taking you up till 11, then handing off to the guys over at Rouse's on Power Boulevard. They're going to take you through all four rounds, the final four rounds of the draft today. Five draft picks, and we're going to get into the fourth round pick for the Saints here. Jonas Sanker.
Third round pick.
That's what I meant.
Yes,
Jonas
sir.
Sanker. He was a 93 pick, which is almost the fourth round pick. It's pretty close. You got toward the end. What was your, you know, we talked a bit about Jonas in the last segment. We're going to hear an exclusive interview we did with him yesterday. But, you know, before we get into that, Charlie, what is your kind of initial read on Jonas? How do you feel about that pick?
Well, when the pick was made, I liked the safety question being answered, right? Xavier Watts was the one on the board that consensus pre-draft process was high on a lot of people's boards, viewed as a lock to be a day two pick. That's who I thought that they were going to go with. He ends up going two picks later to the Atlanta Falcons. But Jonas Sanker, you know, an all ACC player, performer at Virginia this past year. And with Sanker himself, like, you just hear the guy talk. It seems like the Saints have something that they target with these players as far as their character traits and, you know, how smart they are and if they can fit different roles in defense or offense. With Sanker specifically, Mike D had a good tweet about him. I'm pulling up as we speak. You know, I was unaware of the player really in the pre-draft process, but he ends up going in round three, so they obviously have a good plan for him. Mike had put this out just a little bit ago, said, Jonas Sanker is a super smart, instinctive, good open field tackler, is the communicator to others on defense, and is a good special teams player, which is actually something that they brought up in the interview, if he could play special teams, and he said he was willing to do whatever. That seems to be the prevailing thought from a lot of these draft picks. Wherever the team needs me to play, I will play. So we'll see. I mean, at the very least, you get an immediate special teams contributor. I know that's not the most sexy thing to do in the third round, but someone that's going to at least have a role right off the bat.
Yeah, no, if you're getting a core special teamer in the day two of the draft, like, that's a good thing, you know. And
yeah, a lot of people view special teams as like day three. You know, you throw the darts, the special teams coordinator thinks, oh, I want this guy on my unit type of thing. But I mean, at the same time, you sign
It's a developmental thing, right? Like, yeah, I want him to be able to contribute for day one. Like,
right.
I want him to be on the roster. Even if he's, you have Justin Reed, Tyrann Mathieu. He's not going to be your starting safety, but can he get on the field? And here's the thing. With the new kickoff rule, you need those guys. You need guys who can run down and make a tackle, and that's only going to get more important with the changes.
And so he starts out as a special teamer, I think, right off the bat, and eventually can develop into a starting safety in the league.
All right, like we said, we had an exclusive interview with Jonas Sanker on our Draft Fest coverage from yesterday. Coleman, hit it.
Guys, going to welcome in now Jonas Sanker to the WWL Radio Huddle after getting drafted by the Saints in the third round just now. Thanks so much for joining us, Jonas. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good.
Welcome on in. You're here with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, voice of the Saints, Mike Haas, our NFL analyst, Mike Dettillier, and the great Deuce McAllister as well, former Saints running back. We're going to go to Deuce to lead it all things off, Jonas.
Well, first of all, I want to tell you congratulations and welcome to the squad. And, you know, just what I gotta get your thoughts on what it means to you to be able to be coming to the NFL and to the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an honor. And, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunity. You know, I'm grateful for the Saints, you know, investing in me and taking a chance on me. So, you know, I'm not going to take that lightly. And, you know, they're going to get my all.
Position, or at least a secondary position, what are you most comfortable with? Is it at the strong? Is it playing a nickel? Is it at a free safety? Where are you most comfortable playing? And, you know, just talk a little bit about the versatility that you have on that back end.
Honestly, I feel like I'm comfortable wherever. You know, I've spent my whole career, you know, playing all around. So I feel like being versatile and being able to fit in wherever, you know, it just gives me the ability to play, you know, wherever they see me. So, you know, I think I fit any way they see me in their scheme.
You know, I had one more for you. That was supposed to be my last one. Special teams wise, do you have the ability to be able to, you know, play on the core teams, whether it's from the return standpoint or being able to be a cover guy, either kickoff end or punt?
Yeah, honestly, I feel like I could play anywhere. And, you know, I'm a football player, so, you know, wherever they see me playing on special teams, you know, I'll be able to do it.
You know, you say you're a football player, but it seems like you got a pretty damn good IQ. I look at all the schools that were recruiting you. I mean, I don't think they're – if you're Dartmouth, Yale, Penn, Harvard, Boston College, or whatever, and then all of a sudden you had Virginia. I know that's some real schools that you just don't show up. You just don't show up for roll call. You got to go to class. So that is that something that your parents – or your surroundings, because that's impressive that your background and your intelligence, not only as a football player, but as a college student, whatever it might be, to be on this level. Just talk a little bit about that and your background, because if you're getting that kind of recognition, you must have been pretty damn smart in high school.
Yeah, no, you know, UVA definitely took school seriously, so, you know, I took pride in that. And then all throughout high school, you know, my dad was the headmaster of my school, so, you know, he didn't let me slack for one second. So, you know, I've always, you know, taken pride in everything I do, and I think that reflects a lot in my character and then just how I approach everything.
He wasn't getting no skip days.
No. That's right. People think that's good. That's tough, baby. That ain't. That's not. That's a tough thing.
You know, Jonas, I'm looking at, and I think you kind of elaborate a little bit with Deuce on this. Looking at your ability to play both deep and in the slot, and you know, you're playing at the NFL level. You can't be afraid to tackle. I was reading where your size and versatility are two big boxes that you checked off, and you have the ideal frame for an NFL safety prospect. So it seems like the more you could do, whether they put you in the box, they put you in the slot, or you're going deep middle. That's something, and like Deuce said, you play on special teams. The more you could do, you know, whether you're an interior offensive lineman, whether you're playing center, guard, whatever, you're never just one thing. So I know you took pride in that. And then you're flexible enough to be coachable, that what do you want me to do? And then you continuously grow and try and excel in that.
Just learning and, you know, just watching guys ahead of me. But then also just responding well to coaching. I think those are going to be two big things. Coming in with a humble mindset, just, you know, understanding that, you know, I'm new to this level. You know, I'm new to the scheme and everything. So just coming in with an open mind, being ready to learn. That's really all it is. And then being ready to work.
Onus, one of the things, and your coaches brought this up, about your communication skills in the secondary. And I think a lot of times people don't realize, you know, with everything, all these crossing patterns and changing up coverage, they always trusted that you would put these guys in the right spot. You knew what to do, but you were getting other guys to be put in the right position. And that to me, is a big statement when coaches give you that type of responsibility.
Yeah, take pride in that. You know, that goes just into preparation. So for me, that was just, you know, understanding that I had to know everybody's job, whether it was DBs, linebackers, D-line, just understanding everything, understanding the scheme. And that allowed me to kind of just speak openly and just speak quickly, just because I had such a good understanding of everything going on. So really just, you know, goes back to preparation.
Now, Jonas, not everything is 100%. You always want to continuously get better, high school, college, and into the pros. I was reading where, and this happens, because sometimes you want to have that edge, and, you know, not that you're guessing, but I'll say I was reading where sometimes you need to improve on your eye discipline. That's a part of, look, you want the defensive coaches to trust you, but sometimes you got to know when to take a chance. And just talk about a little bit about the eye discipline and what you're looking for going forward in the NFL, because obviously you're going against better competition, and just the aspects of that eye discipline playing on the back end in the secondary.
Yeah, no, that just speaks into just coming in with a humble, open mind, understanding that there's so much room to grow. And, you know, me as a player, I know that, you know, there's so many things I want to improve on, not just eye discipline, just every aspect of my game, just want to keep improving. And with that mindset, you know, the sky's the roof. So just having that mindset, keep working on eye discipline, keep working on weighted footwork, you know, man technique, tackling form, just everything. So just finding ways to always keep improving is going to be a goal for me.
Say, this is Mike Haas. I do play-by-play for the Saints, along with Deuce McAllister, who you talked to first. So let's get first things first. Say your first name for me.
Jonas.
Jonas. All right. Very good.
So no J.
Yeah, no J. Just want to make sure. I don't want to get it wrong first night. I want to keep going. I'm from the Commonwealth of Virginia, like yourself. I'm going to let it go that you didn't go to James Madison where I went, but we'll let that go. So you come to a secondary with veterans like Tyrann Mathieu, Justin Reed. So you have this unique opportunity to me where you can learn from some guys, yet you have an opportunity to play. That's got to be a good kind of feeling for you.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm excited to, you know, see what some of those guys are doing. You know, obviously have so much talent in that room already, but, you know, I look at that as just an opportunity to grow and get better as a player. So, you know, I'm ready to, you know, attack the day and attack the opportunity ahead of me. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
You know, Jonas, when I'm looking at everybody heard, and especially in these parts, I mean, you know what's intriguing? All of a sudden, now you're in the NFL and you're playing with Honey Badger. You're going to be in the damn meeting room. You know, and Tyrann Mathieu, when you think about it, because, you know, I'm sure you watch football growing up and you might see, like, man, look who you're with now and you're on that level. Boy, you got to take a lot of pride in that and just take advantage of this opportunity that you're playing with the likes and all the skins he has on the wall, like a guy like Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger.
Yeah. Nah, definitely. You know, I watched him in college, watched him in the pros. So, you know, excited to, you know, learn from a guy like that.
Jonas, just curious, some of the guys that maybe you looked up to or tried to model your game after.
You know, guys like Buda Baker, guys like, you know, Minka Fitzpatrick, Derwin James, Kyle Hamilton, you know, that list goes on, but that's just kind of a few to, you know, name them. Just, I'm always watching. I'm always, you know, trying to get better off some of the guys ahead of me.
Definitely looking forward to seeing you as part of the Black and Gold and the Who Dat Nation. Definitely going to come out and see everything you're all about during training camp. One thing we got to hear from you right now, though, joining us here on WWL Saints Radio, your first Who Dat since you've been drafted by the Black and Gold now, Jonas. So just curious if you can give us a big old Who Dat for the Black and Gold fans after out there.
Y'all want me to just say Who Dat?
Yeah, yeah, come on.
Yeah, it's our battle cry. Yeah, man. Yeah, you got to give us some effort.
Hey, okay, John. Jonas.
Bobby's going to teach you.
I'm going to teach you. Okay, you got to say, Who Dat? Who Dat? Who Dat say they going to beat them Saints? Who Dat? Okay, I want to hear it now.
No, I just say, all right, Who Dat?
Yeah, but you got to say, Who Dat? Who Dat? Who Dat say ain't going to beat them Saints? Who Dat? Come on. You smart enough. I know. Look at all those Who Dat.
Yeah, he's looking at it. He's looking at it like, what's wrong with you?
Who Dat?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, what is these guys down here talking about?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I tried, man. That's a new one for me, but I tried.
It ain't going to be for long.
I know.
It ain't going to be for long, baby.
Let me tell you, I know they love football in Virginia, but you're in the real deep south. In Louisiana, we love our Saints. The Gulf Coast, Gulf Saints, it's a religion. And listen, it's going to be a spiritual experience you playing for the Saints. I'm telling you right now, the Who Dat Nation's going to love you, going to love you. Come on, bring it.
Welcome, Jonas. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, man.
I appreciate
y'all. All right, so we need to set up Jonas with whoever Tyler Shuck's Who Dat trainer is, because he had
no idea.
I don't know if he's ever heard.
He's just like, y'all want me to say Who Dat?
He's never watched a Saints or Bengals game.
I always, every time I forget about that, and then I'm reminded the Who Day chant.
Who Day? Who is?
And it just makes me mad.
Yeah,
it's so stupid.
Sometimes I'll hear it during the game. I'm like, wait, oh, that's right, they do it too. All right, but okay, so that
we got there
again. That was Jonas Sanker. I keep trying to. I need to stop. I keep wanting to say Jonas Sankey. Jonas Sanker.
Yes.
Okay.
Just remember Valanciunas.
Third round pick of the Saints, number 93 overall. So we went through the picks they made. Now I think it's time to shift over to the rest of the draft. We're going to hit the break here, come back, talk about some of our favorite targets coming in round 4, 5, 6, and 7. I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Charlie Long. This is Draft First Take on WWL. Coming back in on Draft First Take here on WWL, brought to you by TrainSouth.com. Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, Coleman behind the glass. And you know, we've talked a lot about the Saints draft class, as we should. The top four picks in this class are going to be the players we talked the most about. But, you know, the Saints have five picks to make in the bottom four rounds. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they consolidate a little bit, maybe try to push some of these picks to the future, right? Maybe you trade a seventh this year for a sixth next year, something like that. But as of right now, there are five picks to make. So, Charlie, let's start here. Who are some of your favorite players still on the board as we head into the fourth round?
So I'll separate this into two different categories. My favorite player remaining, singular player, is Jack Sawyer, the defensive end from Ohio State. And I'm surprised that he's here, Jeff. The guy was very highly recruited out of high school. He goes to Ohio State, has a long, illustrious career there. Now, the reason that he's fallen to this point is that he didn't do much in the pre-draft process. He didn't want to really do the workouts. There's questions about his athleticism. But if you're just talking about a high-floor defensive end, I think he's a really, really good player. He was someone that I initially had, you know, kind of borderline first round into the day two on my mocks pre-combine. But then the pre-draft process, he definitely cratered a little bit. He's the number 57 overall player on Mike D's big board, the number 9 ranked defensive end in a really good defensive end class. I like him a lot. I think that he's probably going to fly off the board on day three, if I had to guess. But the second part, as I kind of mentioned, my favorite player with Jack Sawyer, there are a ton, and I mean a ton, of really good running backs still left available. And the guys talked a little bit about it last night, kind of previewing day three. Mike and I had been talking about this running back class a lot leading up into the draft, that it's one of the most loaded classes, maybe just behind defensive line. But the running backs this year are fantastic. there have only been six selected so far, Jeff, and I wasn't expecting that. I thought that there was going to be maybe six or seven taken even on day two. There were only four taken. So in total, there's been six drafted, Ashton Jeanty and Omarion Hampton in the first round to the Raiders and the Chargers specifically. And then just yesterday, the Browns, with one of their multiple picks that they didn't use on Shedeur Sanders, took Quinshon Judkins, the running back from Ohio State. The other running back from Ohio State, Travion Henderson, went to the Patriots in the second round. And then a little bit down the board, the Broncos took R.J. Harvey, the running back from UCF, and the Steelers took Caleb Johnson, the running back from Iowa. So there is still a ton of good talent at the running back position, which is a big question mark on this team. Because, you know, Alvin Kamara is getting older. We don't know what's happening with Kendre Miller. He's been a big question mark ever since he's been drafted. So at this point, I would definitely target, if he's there, Jack Sawyer. But if not, you're looking more at the running back position. With one of these fourth round picks, there's still a ton of talent. And we'll dive a little bit into it. Cam Scadaboo from Arizona State.
Yeah,
Dylan Sampson. Yeah, me too. Dylan Sampson from Tennessee, I'm really surprised is still here. I thought he was going to be potentially a second-round pick, maybe at worst an early third-round pick. He's on the board at the start of day three.
Right.
That's a really big name to keep in mind. Damian Martinez from Miami is another one that's really interesting, kind of an in-between-the-tackles runner. You know, maybe it's a really, really high-end comp, but then kind of like a Marshawn Lynch, a very physical back that doesn't like to really bounce out too much. But there's just, yeah, like I mentioned, a lot of talent at the running back position. Some good talent at the edge rusher, as I mentioned, with Jack Sawyer. Also, Braden Swinson still on the board. And he was someone that we had seen going up in pre-draft process, like he was flying up boards. But he was not taken on day two. So he is one of the priority day three guys that's going to, I think, get drafted very quickly from LSU.
Yeah, just a reminder, Saints have two picks in the fourth round. That's 112 overall. That's the 10th pick of the fourth round. So a pretty early pick. Then they have 131. That's a pick they got in the Marshawn Lattimore trade. That's the 29th pick in the fourth round. No fifth round picks, which is kind of funny because last year they had three. This year they have none, but they have a ton of picks. They just don't have any fifth round picks.
Right.
But they have a pick in the sixth round, number 184 overall, another Washington trade. That's actually the trade they sent to it's actually the pick they sent to Washington in the John Ridgeway trade. That came back in the Marshawn Lattimore trade. Then they have the number 248 pick that's actually from Philadelphia. And then the number 254 pick, which is a comp pick. One thing we didn't talk about, you know, Mason Taylor went off the board.
Yes.
You know, so he ended up on the Jets, a good spot for him. You know, there's some fun photos
A good day for the Jets. Yeah. I mean, a good start to the draft as far as because people were projecting them to take Tyler Warren. They end up going with the right tackle, Armon Membu from Missouri, someone that they loved. And now their offensive line is complete. But tight end was still a big question mark for them. And they get the third best tight end in this class with Mason Taylor in the second round. So, and Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network had said that a lot of teams felt really, really comfortable with Mason Taylor. He had a great career at LSU, broke records for the tight end receiving position. And he was someone that could have potentially gone as early as late in the first round because teams just felt so comfortable with him as a prospect, a very safe, high floor type of guy. Like he's going to be a good pro. But he falls into day two, and the Jets address another need. So good for them.
Yeah, two other LSU guys went. Emory Jones to the Ravens at number 91. And then the funny one to me is
Savion
Jones goes to the Broncos at number 101 overall. They actually traded up to go get him. So now that Sean's in Denver, he's willing to take LSU players, which I find very funny. And it kind of reinforces, like, it's not a coincidence that they did not draft LSU players while he was here. They didn't want him. Like, they didn't want the local connection, I think. And now that he's out of this area, LSU players, they're pretty good, right?
The Broncos also added Jahdae Barron, didn't they?
Yes. I think they traded up for him as well.
No, I think they stay put. I think they got him at 20.
Yeah, they did. They took him at 20. But yeah, that's a good. I love the picks they're adding. They have a great defense.
That defense is going to be disgusting.
And it's what like I think the Saints kind of learned throughout the years was like Sean Payton can make things work on offense. You give him the pieces, he'll make things work. You don't have to give him elite pieces. You don't have to make top 10 offensive picks, but you got to give him a defense to support that offense. And the Broncos are doing that.
That Broncos defense was already like top five, and they're adding all this talent in the offseason. That's going to be a scary unit. Jeff, you mentioned, obviously, with the LSU players going off the board in day two with Mason Taylor and Savion Jones. I already brought up Braden Swinson. Another one that I'm a little bit surprised is still on the board, Miles Frazier, the offensive guard. Mm-hmm. Yep. Someone that Mike has talked to me about that he's super high on, that he's a guy that you'll pick. he thought he was going to go day two as well, but he's here on day three. Just a mauler in the run game. There's some work that needs to be done in pass protection, but he's someone that, you know, you're confident can develop into potentially being a starting guard by potentially year two. Yeah. So if you're throwing darts, which is what the third day is typically, maybe outside, like the darts are probably closer to the sixth and seventh rounds, but with the fourth round, if you want kind of a guy that you think is going to start by year two, Miles Frazier is a very safe bet.
You know, if the Saints want to, they could.
I think so too.
Triple dip. I might be talking about something else.
Okay.
If the Saints want to, they could do the triple Longhorn dip.
And go get Jaden Blue?
I was saying Gunnar Helm.
Okay, okay.
Because I think tight end is a need. And I think
yeah, we're not on the same page at all.
He kind of fills that need. But, like, you know, I think that would be kind of fascinating. We've seen the Saints kind of go big on Ohio State. We've seen the Eagles kind of go big on Georgia. Maybe the Saints, maybe Texas. Maybe it becomes, Texas East. The Longhorns East.
I want to be against it. I think that there's other players that I like above Gunnar, especially early in the fourth round. Like, if Dylan Sampson's there from Tennessee, this is a guy that was like I think the SEC Offensive Player of the Year last year.
Yeah.
Ran for 22 touchdowns, over 1,400 yards. Somehow, and he's a local, by the way, he's a local product. Somehow he's sitting here on day three. Yeah. I'm really surprised that he wasn't picked on day two. But for a Saints running back room that needs some juice, Dylan Sampson could definitely provide that.
DJ Giddens, intriguing. There's a lot of, I expect the Saints to come out of this draft with a running back. Just a question of where they go.
Giddens
after
is a really good
DJ
one.
DJ Giddens is really intriguing. Shout. Trevor Etienne. I think is interesting. I don't know where you'll have to take him. I don't think he's 70, or I don't think he's your first third round pick. Maybe he's your second third round pick, or if I'm sorry, I'm all mixed up. Your second fourth round pick, or if he gets to that sixth round spot, I think that's really intriguing. He's a guy that little undersized, but I see him as being kind of an immediate, like, third down kind of scat back contributor. I think one of my goals for Alvin Kamara is to take some of the workload off him from a pass protection standpoint. And, you know, I don't know if Trevor Etienne is that guy, but I'm just kind of talking here. Like, if I'm bringing in a running back, I want to make sure that running back can be a pass pro running back.
Yeah.
Because that's like, I don't want to waste Alvin Kamara reps, having him get blown up by edge rushers in the backfield.
That is the one thing about Sampson that Mike had brought up, is that he's kind of a shorter, squatty back, but he brings a lot of explosion to the rushing game.
Right.
The issue with him and where he needs to work on, and this might be why he did fall to day three, is that he's got a lot of work to do in pass protection. So we'll see what happens with him.
You don't typically trust a rookie in pass pro. I just think that's why if I'm looking at a 30-year-old running back that I know still has a lot of juice left, I want to maximize that juice. I don't want to send Alvin out there and constantly have him try to pick up free rushers.
But yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of the running backs in this class are good pass protectors, yeah, which is, you know, they're not just super talented ball carriers, which they are as well. A lot of these guys still on the board have a lot of juice, right? But the pass pro part of it is definitely an aspect. And Dylan Sampson, someone that I'm really high on, former Dutchtown Griffin from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So we'll see what happens with him. I expect him to be picked pretty quickly, but if he's there on the board for the Saints at pick 112, I would love that pick.
I also still think edge rusher is somewhere you look. Swenson, I think you mentioned Braden Swenson.
Yep.
You know, he's out there. Jack Sawyer. Kyle Kennard is really intriguing. I thought that South Carolina defensive line in general, like, if I got anybody off of it, I'd feel good.
Those guys were flying off the board in day two.
Yeah, that was an elite unit, so it's not a surprise. Tyler Barron out of Miami. Jared Ivey out of Ole Miss. There's some really intriguing names. You know, I don't know if these are guys you expect to contribute right away. The issue with drafting an edge rusher late is, like, is an edge rusher a special teams contributor? Where are you going to put him on this roster? Is my point. So, because you're going to have to start to think about that. Then that's like also wide receiver, right? If I'm taking a wide receiver in the sixth round, is he going to make my roster? Can he play special teams? And that's like I look at a Jalen Royals. I really like Jalen Royals out of Utah State. I think he's one of the best players currently on the board. But is he going to make my roster at this point?
We'll see how highly they value the receivers on the board, or if they just roll into the season with what they've got. Alec Iomanner is one to mention as well from Stanford.
Is that how you say that name?
Yeah, Iomanner.
Okay.
He's a 6'2", 205-pound, big body receiver, kind of contested catch guy. And we're talking about with running backs that you have to be able to pass block and help the quarterback in the passing game that way. With receivers, you know, the best way to get into a coach.